Accession number 12716, Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 5.
Mr. J. Coughlin, Reel 5. When your duties were over, Mr. Coughlin, how did you relax whilst you were in Emmerich?
Well, I was going to the cafes and, like any other young lads, have a word. I say, now, we used to sometimes go, we used to walk into Lille. It was about a mile and a half along the canal way, to Lowe's Lille, along with that, and then have the night out of the nightclubs there, whatever the nightlife there was. Well, what bit of nightlife there was. Otherwise, we should just go around the establishments and have a few drinks, as, you know, get in gangs and try to make as much amusement as we could for ourselves, you know, amuse ourselves. With women, of course, and all, if there was any there, lasses, it was entertainers, like, you know. Which there wasn't like us. We're in a village in Emmerich. We had to go into Lille if you wanted any entertainment of any kind, or of any. Because there was only little establishments and little cafes, that's all there were. They all sell beer and whiskey and anything you wanted, like, and coffee or meals. You could always get egg and chips or, you know, or all like that, you know. Earths, whatever they call them.
Did any of the chaps yourself get involved with any of the French girls?
They got involved, but none of them ever, you know, ever got that far involved. Once we weren't there long enough, you understand what I mean. It was a village. Well, it was a little, I think it would be no bigger than, what would you say? You know, be as big as Eskom, somewhere like that, you know. Well, it wouldn't be a little place about as big as that was. People, and it was all farm people. Because we're billeted in farmyards, all billeted in farmyards. We've got, you know, a lot of the local people, mind. Oh, I went to go to the houses at night, they used to invite us with this vin blanc, they used to have a make their own wines, and this vin blanc and that, and champagne, they used to make their own, a lot of them used to make their own. Oh, aye. In fact, you were invited to supper, like, with a lot of them. It wasn't a lot, because they had much themselves, you understand what I mean? But what they had, you were welcome to it, like, you know. But it was all homemade. There was no bought stuff. It was all what they'd made themselves. Bread, everything, the butter, you know, a little farm village it was. Everything was homemade. You could have plenty of eggs or anything, you know. Milk and all their butter was not salted. They never used to salt the butter. It was unsalted butter, all their farm butter. I used to buy lots of farm butter off them.
Yeah. Where were you when the Germans actually started their offensive? Their breakthrough?
Well, in the wood there, up just up at Arras there, up in the woods.
Hadn't you gone up into Belgium first?
We'd gone up there, but it was your remark, we'd come back, and then we walked, and then they broke through, like, then they broke through farther up on the right, didn't they? They come through there, so they rushed us up there, then. All I remember, we're getting in trouble, come on, and we went it back in action again, and we hadn't, you know, like, come, and they were straight up there, and, as I say, I didn't know where we were at, because we went into this wood, and we were advancing, like, you know, hardly advanced, like, you all know, it was a rifle and bayonet, they're ready, you know, and,
this was the long march from the ridge to into the action.
Situation. Into the action, yes, yeah, to the ridge.
What do you recall of that actual march? Do you recall?
Well, I wouldn't say it was a long march. It was just I don't think it'd be a mile, would it? I'm not so sure what it was. You know, I can't just remember it. We were dog tired. I know we travelled all night. I know, and we didn't know where we didn't know where we were at. If they hadn't told us where we were at, because you weren't briefed so much, we were just more or less. It was a meme, you tossed it, we were thrown in at it, like, in the deep end, just thrown in the deep end, I thought. Well, when I got back, like, because everybody was thrown in the deep end when they broke through, like, they didn't know where we were at. We'd never heard of the places, so we wouldn't know where we were at. And I'd never been there before, like, you know.
What was expected of you? What was your role expected to be?
Were you
in a fighting role, or...?
Well, we had to defend, you know, fight, but then again, we had to be intelligent enough to think for ourselves and think for the other people and all, you know what I mean, to think for anything we saw at the time, like, we were more like advanced more than anything else, intelligent, to see what we could pick up, like, you know, and report.
Were you attached to any particular company?
No, we're HQ company, like, we're HQ company, but we're like, for every company, like, we're HQ company. That was our company commander, from the HQ, was the company commander.
Who was that?
Oh, dear me. I don't know if it was Lockhart or what. I don't know, he was transport manager. I couldn't tell you who he was. Captain Olroy, that's right. He was the company commander, HQ company commander. Well, as I say again, we didn't have much to do with him because we had our platoon commander, you understand what I mean? We took orders from him. He took orders from the company commander to the to the section commander. Like, you know, I was to get my orders from Coulson, and from Coulson from the sergeant. Tommy German, he was my sergeant. See, I never got much in contact with him. So you don't get much in contact with him because he's in charge. He has so much to do with it. If they were briefed, the officer used to go and get briefed and come back and brief you.
What was Coulson like?
Well, he was a very timid bloke, very timid, very timid. Young lad, he was a bit nervous, on the nervous type. He shouldn't have been an officer, really.
Was he with you when you went into action?
Well, no. I think he just went a little bit... I don't think he went. He went just a little bit the wrong way. You don't like to say it, like, but, you know, that. But he went just a little bit the wrong way. And I never saw him no more after
so
that.
So were you led by your sergeant?
Sergeant, yes, I.
And what do you recall of the action?
Pardon?
What do you recall of that event?
Well, I didn't have much time to recall anything, though. We were just going in and everything seemed to happen all of a sudden, you understand what I mean? They were waiting of us, more or less, I thought. They were just waiting of us. Because they were positioned, we were going in to try and beat them back, more or less, weren't we? We were on the defence, going in to beat them back, and he was waiting for us, more or less, because he took them positions, you understand what I mean? Well, so there.
What happened to you?
In what way, like?
Well, you went into this situation.
I wasn't nervous. Oh no, I didn't know. I tell you the truth, none of us didn't know what to expect. We didn't. We weren't prepared for it. Let's put it that way, then.
Were you under fire?
Oh, under fire, naturally. But see, we're being in the wood. It's very difficult to tell. You understand what I mean? Very difficult. Who was firing? Who was firing? What? All I said, these Germans showed hands up with someone nice as well, not for me, I says, you know, to myself, like, and they were all, you know, run different ways, like. As it happened, as I just jumped there, I just dived into there, and I was just ready for them, like, I was going to have a go, like, you know, but they never come near me.
You dived into what?
This trench at the side of the wood. It was like a little trench where the water was running down, you know. I just dived in there, and the others must have just walked straight into them, you know, more or less surrounded them. And they were hustling them away, you know, the prisoners, they never thought about looking. So I just crawled away farther down and got out of there, and I bumped into, what was the regiment? The Queens, or somebody, Queens, I think they called the regiment. And he says, that I went to the office, where are you from? He says, the drum. He says, oh, they've had a bashing up there. I says, drop in here with this lot. That's all he says. We're fighting a rear guard. And that's all we did. You know, back right down to Boulogne, around to Dunkirk there, onto Le Pans.
So you came out with the Queens?
Well, I don't know. I come out with anybody, you know what I mean? Because when we hit the bit, you're anybody's, weren't you? I come home with the Queens a lot, out of the Queens regiment. And then if you lost them, you would just dug in with, you know.
You never met up with Durham's again, did you?
No, not just on the beaches. I met some of the lads. I was stuck with a bloke. He wanted to try to get to England on a rowing boat. I said, oh, we're going to get on a rowing boat in England, he says. He said, oh, well, there's an old rowing boat up the bay. I said, we'll never get there, man, on that. I got out, like, you know.
Do you recall any incident on that way back to the beaches, other than the one you've just described?
Oh, it was more shelling than anything else. There was no actually hand fighting. I'd never seen any. It was more shelling. You never had a chance. What did I tell we had, like, you know? All I remember, we're going through Boulogne, and we're there, and he says, officer says, dump all the trucks in the quarry. It was putting trucks in, just putting them in gear and setting them over top of the quarry, over top of the quarry, in the harbour, just to let them drop into the harbour. He says, get out. That's all we did, so the Germans wouldn't get them, you know. Well, they all went in the harbour, brand new trucks, some of them and all. Now he says, get back, fall back. And that's all he says, he just more or less, now he's bumped into some more, so he says, get in, and they all said, drop in with them. So they didn't know, everybody was with anybody. We were in our call, only disorder. Nobody knew where they were and what they were doing, I'll tell you that, on the retreat back. Well, we were a shambles, weren't we? Let's be honest, you can tell you when we landed on the beaches and that, we didn't know, we had no sense of direction whatsoever. But nobody to command us, nobody to, you know, because the officers had no, they couldn't phone back and say, well, fetch or send the artillery over there. They had no, the note failed telephone, we had nothing, you know what I mean, we'd lost everything.
What were your feelings like by then, at this situation?
Well, I thought I was never going to get out. I thought, well, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know whether, you know, whether it would be, we're going to get taken prisoner, or whether I was going to get shot, or whether I was going to get shell. You know, it was shelling that was affecting us most.
How does that affect you?
Horrible. It doesn't know where, you see, a rifle, you have to be near. You can have a chance with a rifle, but with a shell, you have no chance of you. And mortar bombs worse still than mortar, see, because see, you can't fire back at them. If the infantry coming at you, fire back at you, you have a chance. But when shells are coming at you, you can't, you don't know where they're going to land, do they? Them, the bars, and it doesn't matter where they're going to land, it's what they're hitting. How they, if they hit the building, you need it, well, it just kills you, doesn't it? Like, with the masonry falling off, doesn't it? Like, if we're in the street fighting, we're street fighting, like, you know, you're not so bad, you can see your enemy, can't you? But poor shelling. Very demoralising is shelling. To any soldier. Well, you know, it's bloody hell, you can't see it till it comes over top of you and drops.
Had you been dive bombed?
Oh, aye, along the road.
What was that like?
Well, infantry wasn't dive bombed, it was more transport they were dive bombing. Because, see, we're in fields, weren't we, coming back? They were dive bombing transport, all transport. Very rare they come for us unless they come down a machine gun as we're running through the field, you know what I mean? Open after drop the bomb, come down machine. But as regards the dive bomb, now, we didn't get much because on count, it did on the beaches, mind. But it was the transport they were after, you know, bouncing the killer, stopping you from getting back, do you see? There was ammunition trucks and one thing, another stopped they all for trains and everything, for getting up for anything was trying to get at us the line of supply, anyhow, wasn't it?
What was your experience of refugees?
Well, they were an hindrance, weren't they? Like, you know, you couldn't. Poor buggers, like, I felt sorry for them, like, some of them, because some of them were trying to wheel the stuff in wheelbarrows, some of them were carrying kids in there. Well, it's a pitiful sight, anyhow. Some of them had lost their parents, some of the kids were squealing, and didn't know that they were just, because some of them went, because, you know, when it was dive bombing, they didn't have no consideration for nobody. That's what we thought, because once you let them bombs go, like, you can't do nothing about it, like, you can't say, oh, I've let them go, I can't stop them now. Well, they were very cruel. Well, I thought so anyhow, like, you know, they were, didn't seem to show any sympathy at all. Because they were hindering the retreat, they were hindering the advance. That's why they wanted the roads clear, to get through the Germans with their things, you know what I mean, to get through, naturally. And they were knocking every bit of transport out they could get. Stop anything getting up to us for ammunition or out like that, or supplies. Oh, it was...
Did it make you particularly... frustrated that you just couldn't get at them, you couldn't get a situation where you could give them tit for tat, there was too many
of them. We were outnumbered, outclassed, outgunned, outshot, out everything. No matter what we tried to do, we couldn't. If we tried to defend, they were just running through us like flies, just run out, you know, with the tanks. We had no support, had we? We just had to rely on our rifles and machine guns and Bren guns, whatever we had. We had nothing mortars, like, we had nothing heavy to hit them back with. We had no anti-tanks. Well, they had the gun, which was...
The boys?
No good. You have to be nearly near the tank from about 10 yards away before it would go through. It'd say, well, it was suicide to get, you know, unless you could creep up on the side of them and shoot, you know, get at it. No, we were short of everything. We were outgunned, outclassed, outboxed, out everything. And if you see the way we come, well, it shows on some of the Garmin graphic on the pictures how we come back, because we were, some of them had no rifles, some had no equipment, some had nothing, you know, because they were that tired. The Germans never left us alone, you know, they kept at us all the time.
Did you come off on the Dunkirk beaches?
Yeah.
What was the scene like on those beaches?
Very calm, just like a duck pond. I landed at Dover.
How did you get off?
What do you mean?
How did you get off the beach?
Oh, I swam out and we got on top of this, I was getting up on this, I don't know what it is, like a old ship. As I was getting on, he says, throw your equipment off, throw your rifles away, throw them away, get everything off. He says, I don't want anything on you. Climb on it, and it was all pulling us all on, we laid like that. About six on top of me, or five, you know, my hand was trailing in the water. And they had to say, stop it, no more, the boat's going down, let's get. I thought we wouldn't have landed. I never thought we'd have gotten into Dover.
Was it a big ship or a small ship?
Small ships, there'd be about 30 or 40 was on. Because it was dark again. It was dawn, just about dawn when I was pulling into Dover. The thing. Never seen a better life in all my life when I saw them white cliffs of Dover. Right, we just beached us off there. And
what kind of a greeting did you get when you came off?
Well, so we went and they got us up to the station. And cups of tea, there was their Salvation Army, the Naffy, everybody giving us cups of tea and a big sandwich, you know, a big woof sandwich, because some of us had clothes and some of us had nothing. I tossed my coat off and everything, no overcoat, no things on. It was even like some of them had no boats on to get, you know, because they didn't want to sink. Some of them couldn't swim, because they took the boats off and everything. Well, when they landed, some of them only landed in the underbloody clothes. They gave us blankets and that, so we got up, but they whipped us onto the station, like, Dover station then, and put us on a train. I didn't know where I was going, and I landed up Knutsford, Manchester. That's where I landed. Got off the train there, I didn't know where I was at. Didn't a clue, not a clue. I went into this wood or something, and there was a big lake and the thing in Knutsford, like a big, I forget what they call it. And they give me, the bloke says, no tents, everyone's occupied, no crowd, so he give us some blankets, and he says, sleep underneath the tree. So I slept underneath the train, and well, next morning we had to go and report to the receptionist, or if you ever called, or the company office, and there they were tapping all particulars, the sergeant, like, who was your regiment, where you at, how you been, all this, you know, all your particulars. And I think I was there about a week till they found out where my regiment was, where my battalion was.
Was there any of the Durhams with you?
Oh, I was one or two. Oh, they've all come from all over. See, they've come from all over. Oh, I always would have said, well, four of us that I know of. But they don't live in Bishop. They were lads, you know, the lads I knew, like, they joined the Durhams, but they weren't Bishop lads.
Well, what were your feelings being defeated and coming back?
Well, we didn't know what they expected. I didn't know what were they defeated or what were they. They'd never heard no wireless or news or anything. We didn't know what to expect. Like, you know, we don't have it, naturally. We're all really demoralised, in other words. I think I said, this is it, like, you know, what's going to happen now? We had no idea what was going to happen until we went to the office the next morning, the court of the office, and see what was happening. And he says to me, I was there a week, and I got my mother got a report that I was missing. Presumed took prisoner. I was living in Birmingham, my mum got the letters, and she hadn't, because they never heard of me for about a month, see. So they didn't know where I was at the battalion, because they was, you know, they were split up all over. Some of them got back before me, like, you know, they were all, I didn't know, I didn't know nothing. And what was happening then? They found the battalion down in Dorset somewhere, Abbotsbury, down that way. And I was reported to...
Had you got home before this?
No, I never went home.
So they moved...
I never got leave, no.
You were moved from Knutsworth to Abbotsbury?
Abbotsbury. When I got there, they told me I would report them. They didn't know we should have been there. That's where I met up with the bulk of the lads then. They weren't up to strength, mind, they were. Because they were all in shambles again, and the first thing they did, they put us on the beaches, guarding the beaches. We dug in the shingle. It was a stand two in the morning, stand two at night, and they put me on one of them searchlights. So this is Andy. The first thing he's going to hit is this searchlight, you know, for night. With these searchlights on the beaches of Judy's Title Answers. I says, the searchlight is going to knock out first, isn't he? That's the answer. And we all got lousy. That burned all our uniforms after being there over a week or a fortnight. Because it breeds in shingle, there's lice. We were down there quite a while, about you know, until the scare was off.
So where were you sleeping? What was your accommodation for sleeping?
Where we were at?
In the tent.
Yeah. It was standing till all the time, really. Because we thought Jerry was going to come, didn't they? Like, you know, we says, well, he says, we had some, he says they had barrels of oil or something out at sea. I don't know, I never seen any, you know, so when we fired it, we set the sea on fire to stop them from getting ashore, like, you know. We were down there for quite a while, like, guarding the beaches.
What was the condition of the battalion regarding weapons and
equipment?
Well,
we had nought. The bare necessaries. We had nothing. In fact, if it'd come, it could have taken us better than it had taken us in France, easier than it had taken us in France. Unless we'd had some artillery, which we had in Dover and all that to stop them, you know, building, hadn't we? But we had no artillery where we were at. No artillery, just stop them from landing on the beaches, that's all we were there for. Stop the LCTs from getting ashore, you know, or the boat, oh, that's all we were, stop the jury landing craft, that's all. Right on, well, sea was flappy to flap hours, you know, when it come a while, you know, when we were digging right, sandbagged along and all, like, it was, because digging shingle, it takes some digging, you know. We'd put sandbags, shingle, and just dig a slight, you know, get behind them. That's what we were all behind. We to come get relieved, like, you know, and come have a slight, you know, and then have to go on guard, and we had to come back just about 200 yards or 300 yards back into the field, off the, just off the beach onto the field, because it was all fields, like, you know, we all come. Was asleep in bivouacs, you know. Just come back for hours, then relieved, and go on a duty again. You know, more or less in, on and off. Stand to on a night for 2 hours, and stand to on a morning, you see, and then we'd have the things in between. We didn't do any training, that's all we did. Well, did PT if we weren't on guard, like, you know, so
if you weren't in your slit trenches, were you sleeping in your bivouacs?
That's right.
And how they were getting food to you?
Well, there was full kitchen there, like, you know, they had the kitchens there, they had the tents there, the cook house was there, they had a bit of a cook house there, his company had a cook house, you know. Well, we did get a bit of a pass, like, to go into the village, but you had to have a pass to go in, you couldn't go in, you know, just like when you were off duty to go in, you had to have a pass, to say what you want on duty. Anybody catch, well, they automatically got put in the guardhouse, like, for not having no pass, for not having permission to go into the village. But we more or less were just day and night sleeping, day and night, you know, till the scare got off. Till they knew he wasn't coming. I think it would be about a month or 3 weeks there, probably, well, I don't know.
Did you get much chance to meet the population around about the civilians?
No, not down on the beaches, we didn't. I didn't know anybody. Well, we met the locals, like, a few locals, because they were mined and all, you know, the beaches were mined. We'd mine the beaches, so that's why we had to, the mine just behind us and all, you had a gap in the minefield, so if they're getting on the beaches, they would drop back to the behind the minefield, you see, so they couldn't get at us there, like, so you had gaps in them to go onto the beaches.
Where were your bivouacs in relation to the mines? Were you in front of
them? Oh, not far back, just about 200 yards far back from, you know, yeah.
Was it a deep minefield?
No, some of them were in the shingle. Oh, some were in the shingle, see, because they make a minefield, you always put a gap in, you know. So when they close it on the night, it has on danger mines, like, you know, we don't tell jury that, like, with that, you know what I mean, for anybody. They're getting too near to them, keep away from the minefields, you know.
Were there any accidents with them?
Nope. Not that I know of, because then there was no cattle there. We had to keep cattle, all cattle were taken, you know, where there was any mines, fields, or it was bad weather, so cattle couldn't get in at them, you know what I mean. Oh, no, I never had any trouble. Not that I know, not that we left, anyhow.
Where were the officers living once you were in your bivouacs?
They were living in the tents, same as us. They were living with the companies. Or they weren't living in the village. That headquarters maybe might have been in the village, but the company headquarters, the company commanders and the section commanders' officers lived with us. Well, they lived in a separate tent, like, a separate bivouac, like, a bigger one, a bit bigger than us, like. But they were all there, everybody, you know, they had to be there, aye.
You said you weren't training, you were just there?
Just there, we couldn't train, we wanted to leave the beaches. But to be, you know, for backup and all, if the blokes were all training, that would happen, what would have happened? We'd have had no reinforcement, would we, like, understand what I mean? The scare was on, it was stand to all the time, more or less.
Did you have any particular occasions when you were called out because you thought they were coming?
No. I never heard of any. Unless I was off duty that time, you know, when I was off duty, it might have been some, but I never was called out. Not that I know of, I can't remember, I can't recall. Might have been, but not me, I never got
called. What were you doing now?
Me?
Yeah. What were you? Before you were in the intelligence section, what were you now doing? What were you doing on the beaches?
Oh, we hadn't formed anything yet. We were all standing tall. There was nobody, what you would call, in a section, we're in a company, but that's all. There was a mortar section, they hadn't even any mortars, so we couldn't, you know, there wasn't ACAC section, they were all there, just all placed in for to guard the beaches to stop them from landing, that's all.
You'd lost a lot of men, obviously, in France. Was there any reinforcements coming through for you?
Well, they were all stragglers all over coming in. Huh? We've got a lot of... We've got some of them, Argyll and Southern Ireland, some Scotchmen. We've got a lot of Scotchmen. Reinforced for Argyll and Southern Islanders, something like that.
And how did they settle?
Not so well. Argyll and Southern Islanders, they were, from up in Scotland. We were reinforced with them. Scotchmen, all Scotchmen. They all had a lot of their own bonnets when they come, like that, to take them off and change. I remember seeing them all with their bonnets on, you know, they still had the bonnets. They were very good lads among them, a lot of good lads. I got a lot of mates, I met a lot of friends among them. Well, they stopped with us, like, all the time. And they reinforced us, they were the ones that reinforced us.
They must have been a little bit resentful when they first came, that they were moving out of their own regiment.
Well, naturally, you don't like it. And you transferred, and they were transferred as a unit, like about, there might have been 200 or 300 of them. Well, it's not so bad like that. It's when you transfer, there's one you don't know anybody. Your dude knows, you know, they didn't take it too bad because they didn't want to come, naturally. They went in a Scots regiment rather than an English regiment. You know what I mean? That's what they all said. They'd rather went in a Scots regiment than an English regiment. But after, you know, they got very nice. Well, we did very well with them, I thought, anyhow. I had no trouble with them. Like, we never had any trouble with them. But they just really resentment of going into an English regiment, that's all.
So you're there, you said, for a number of weeks. What time of the year would this be?
What? The beach?
On the beach.
Well, it was June, it'll be August, September. Somewhere around about there. We come back on the June, and the thing went down there about August, September.
As you gradually got better off, more equipment and that, were you beginning to be put more into sections and platoons and whatever?
Well, we did when we got withdrawn from the beaches. But to be withdrawn from the beaches, we were just... There was no intelligence section, no... Everybody was a rifleman, you understand what I mean? Nobody had to know what company they were. Oh, just officer, sergeant in charge of us, that's all, or whatever it was, just to keep it, you know, in line, that was all. Now, when we withdrew from the beach, we start putting back in our sections, you know, training to what we were, training to be a Bren gun carrier, anti-tank gunner, a ACAC man, a machine gun man, an infantry man, and we started getting our equipment then, you understand what I mean? We had nothing then. That was when we pulled back off the beaches.
Where did you pull back to?
We went back, when we pulled back then, I went to a place called down in Devon then, Hoofcombe, a place called Hoofcombe in Devon. Now we got organised there, reorganised. Well, I was transferred from there into the ACAC section. Because they started forming a new intelligence section. They still formed a one, but it was done away with up the desert because it was no good. Once they went in action, it was no good. It wasn't modern warfare, it was intelligence. The intelligent men is the men that... These do-or-die men, then, after that, you know, they go up front, the SS men, they're the intelligent, they went as intelligent, then they formed that regiment, then. But what was done away was, I went in the ACAC, you know, on the aircraft, and then I went from there into the anti-tank.
So you were in the ACAC. How was that section made up?
There was about, well, there were the buglers, really. Well, we were, as I told you before, we had ACAC guns mounted on 1,500 weights, protecting the convoys as we, you know, wherever we went for air, like we went from, you know, wherever we went. If we're on route marches, we still have to have the ACAC guns, you know, to protect, and even, you know, and that if trains come out, you know. It was like a guards for the battalion, ACAC guards for the battalion. Sometimes if you're in two in the front, two in the back, but if in open fields or in open country at the sides and at the back and at the front, you know, for the crossfire, for planes coming at you. Port to protect the convoy.
And were you training in that role?
Yeah, no, I trained on that. I mounted on the back of the lorry, on the 15 or a wet lorry. It was three, it was like two, like a corporal maybe, two gunners, like, you know, and an ammunition man, you know, three or four all together. I think it was three of us in a corporal or something like that, you know.
How many guns were in the ACAC sections? You know, how many was in there all together?
Oh, well, had four guns, four men in a gun, about four men in a gun, like, you know, four men of a section.
And who commanded it?
Well, we didn't have an officer. We were more or less of a sergeant. We had that many sergeants, I don't know. I know a few. You know, but we were what you call a wild lot, the ACAC. Very wild lads, all young lads, and, you know, they took some controlling. Well, we did take some controlling, let's put it that way. Because we were all recognised for being crazy, you know, a bit headstrong. Which you are at 19 and 20, aren't you, like, you know, so we had more or less, sergeants couldn't control us. What about four or five? But I know, big Jim Houston, I think was one. Ooh, I forget the names, you know, I forget the names, that four that I know of, four or five.